Last night I mentioned gravity as an example of ubiquitous wildness. So I'd like to pick up on that theme just to start, and with the help of a poet, Rainer Maria Rilke, who weighed in on gravity in one of his poems, in his Book of Hours, which he wrote in his late 20s. Darn him. It's one of the most profound books I've ever read, Book of Hours, in late 20s. In his 20s, he wrote this. And this one is, he didn't title his poems in this book, he numbered them. I don't know the number of this one. How surely gravity's law, strong as an ocean current, takes hold of even the smallest thing in the world and pulls it towards the heart of the world. How surely gravity's law, strong as an ocean current, takes hold of even the smallest thing and pulls it toward the heart of the world. This translation from the German, by the way, is by Anita Barrows and Joanna Macy. I recommend that translation of the Book of Hours. How surely gravity's law, strong as an ocean current, takes hold of even the smallest thing and pulls it towards the heart of the world. Each thing, each stone, blossom, child is held in place. Only we, in our arrogance, push out beyond what we each belong to for some empty freedom. By the way, I should say that when Rilke uses the word thing, he means it in a sacred sense. And in English, it means, you know, just dross or something. But for Rilke, thing refers to the sacred, which is everything. So he gives three examples here of things: stone, blossom, child. How surely gravity's law, strong as an ocean current, takes hold of even the smallest thing and pulls it towards the heart of the world. Each thing, each stone, blossom, child is held in place. Only we, in our arrogance, push out beyond what we each belong to for some empty freedom. If we surrendered to Earth's intelligence, we could rise up rooted like trees. If we surrendered to Earth's intelligence, we could rise up rooted like trees. Instead, we entangle ourselves in knots of our own making and struggle lonely and confused. So, like children, we begin again to learn from the things, because they are still in God's heart. They have never left Him, the things. This is what the things can teach us. To fall, patiently to trust our heaviness. Even a bird has to do that before he can fly. How surely gravity's law, strong as an ocean current, takes hold of even the smallest thing and pulls it towards the heart of the world. Each thing, each stone, blossom, child is held in place. Only we, in our arrogance, push out beyond what we each belong to for some empty freedom. If we surrendered to Earth's intelligence, we could rise up rooted like trees. Instead, we entangle ourselves in knots of our own making and struggle lonely and confused. So, like children, we begin again to learn from the things. For they are still in God's heart. They, the things, have never left Him. This is what the things can teach us: to fall, patiently to trust our heaviness. Even a bird has to do that before he can fly. just occurs to me this morning that this poem turns upside down our notions of education. Instead of debating how we can best educate children to take their place in the life-destroying society, we could be learning from the children and the other things that Rilke calls the things. We could be learning from them. So, what can we learn from the things? I want to suggest three sorts of things we can learn from the things. And these coincidentally happen to be my three topics. Nature can teach us how to fall. In particular, how to surrender to our own spontaneities, our own human spontaneities. And in particular, how to fall into the underworld in search of our individual puzzle pieces of the great mystery. Nature teaches us how to go on that underworld journey, which is especially important in that stage of life, I believe I spoke about yesterday, the cocoon, after confirmation, after you've left home, despite the voices giving you their bad advice. You've gone out the door into the wild night, and you're on your way on into the underworld journey. Nature can teach us how to do that. For example, with the metaphor, or the, not even the metaphor, the example of the butterfly, actually the caterpillar, who finds a cocoon or weaves a cocoon to prepare for his or her own death and rebirth. Okay, so that's one thing nature can teach us, how to fall. The second thing is it can remind us what natural human wholeness looks like and feels like. What does it look like to be a whole human being? And that's my topic today and tomorrow. And the third thing nature can teach us is how to grow whole as humans, stage by stage. And that I'd like to take a look at with you on Monday. What does nature suggest about the stages of human life? And today and tomorrow, what are the components or dimensions of human wholeness through in any stage of life? What are the components of human wholeness in any stage? Monday, what do the stages look like from the perspective of nature? Okay, so what do we need to stop before noon today? Is that what I heard? I was going to ask if we can go a little bit past noon, because that's what there was on the schedule, was noon.
Sure.
So, not because I want to talk to you or at you for 2 hours, but I want you to have some experiential aspects to this, and I want you to have a break and so on. We can't shift with the veterans?
We have lunch.
That would work for me, if we had lunch and then came back for a half hour. Then we could stop at 11:30, come back at 12:30. If you do take care of yourself, of course, you'll miss one quarter of your human wholeness. We're probably already missing half or three quarters anyway, so it's, you know, it's still a win situation. Okay, so the challenge before me, at least, is to go through a tour of our entire human wholeness in 2 hours. Hour and a half, and then another half hour. So, this is, you could say, this is a map of the self, and you have my map there in your handout. It's two-sided, and it says the map, human, nature-based map of the human psyche. And we're going to go this morning through the outside circle, not the inner circle, but the outer circle. There's four things in that outer circle. You can look at either side. For example, one side says nurturing parent on the top, and the other side on the top it says generative adult, probably. Okay, this is your nature-based map. Okay, it's my nature-based map of the human psyche. And the one with nurturing parent on the top is what are names for how you experience your own wholeness from the perspective of your own consciousness. This is how you relate to these dimensions of your wholeness. We're just doing the outer circle today, not the inner one. And the other side, which says generative adult at the top, is how other people relate to your human wholeness. The way other people see you when you're coming from or embodying those four dimensions of your human wholeness. So that's why it says interpersonal on the bottom left of that side and intrapersonal on the other side, on the bottom left. Anybody not with me? It's your basic orientation to the map. Any questions about that? If you don't have that, you could get lost. The first side that says nurturing parent on the top, these four sets of things, the nurturing parent in the north, sage, fool, trickster, innocent in the east, and so on, are the ways you are my names for the ways you might experience your own human wholeness. And the other side is how other people will experience you when you are embodying those dimensions of your wholeness. Looks like some of you didn't get that handout and your hands are up to get it. Either that or you're waving at me. And okay, so our task today is to go through the outer circle, both sides. I think I mentioned my hypothesis yesterday, which my working hypothesis is that this map covers it all. This map covers all, it's not a brief theory of everything, it's just a map of our human wholeness, or something close to what Jung meant by the self, capital S. Okay, a brief distinction between the self and the soul. They're very different things. The self is our wholeness, and the soul is our, you might say, our purpose or our place in the world. An analogy would be the self is our toolbox, our human toolbox, our resources, our fundamental human resources to do or be anything in life. Fundamental set of tools is the self, which is what we'll be looking at today. And the soul is what we do with those tools. What we were born to do with those tools. We all have the same toolbox, more or less, and we each have an absolutely unique set, unique thing to do. If anyone has paper and crayons, feel free to use them on the map or on any other page while we're going through this. We have a request for the self and soul definitions again. Self is our wholeness. The four dimensions of, you might say, four sets of resources, intrapsychic resources for being fully human. And the soul is our individual purpose, or our ultimate place in the world, or the largest conversation we can have with the world. That last definition is David White's, the largest conversation we are capable of having with the world. Each one of us is born to have a very unique and mysterious conversation with the world, but we're all born with the same toolbox of basic human resources, which is the self. The self is a single thing, but on this map, there's four dimensions of the self, and those are four dimensions of one thing, the self. The self has a nurturing parent component, and it has a wild, enchanted, etc. self component. And it has a muse, etc. component, and it has a trickster component, which arrayed in the four directions wheel. Now, unlike a lot of things you might have seen that are on four directions wheels, you know what I mean by four directions, the four compass directions? This one is faithfully designed so that every piece on here really does resonate with the qualities of nature that are found in those four directions. It's not just a random four. It's really very much rooted in nature, and I'm leaving out that explanation this weekend because it would just take us too long, but some of you might be really interested in exactly how, and what does nurturing parent have to do with north? and so on. And please ask me at meals or in between sessions, and be happy to talk about that. Okay, a brief comment of therapy, about therapy, especially to upset all the therapists here. Anybody want to identify themselves as a therapist? Courageous, all right. My hand is up because I am. Okay, here's another working hypothesis, and that is that the best therapy would help people access the resources of the self and not pay so much attention to our woundedness. The best therapy, this is a hypothesis, would help or does help people access and learn to access and embody the four dimensions of the self in everything they do, and not put primary emphasis on healing our woundedness, because the self is the best resource for healing woundedness. A good therapist is someone who has cultivated the four dimensions of their wholeness, and they teach and coach and evoke their clients to do the same. And that's what I hope to lead you through today and tomorrow. I'm going to evoke the four dimensions of your wholeness, of our wholeness, individually. Then tomorrow we're going to look at the four dimensions of our woundedness. And the experiential exercises tomorrow are to be in relationship to your woundedness from the place of yourself, capital S, self. Today is to evoke the self. Tomorrow is to be in relationship with your woundedness from the place of the self. You could call it self-therapy, capital S. Now, Jung had a similar idea about the four functions of consciousness, and he said, correct me if I get this wrong at all, he said, we're born with one or two of those functions fairly strong, which ones depend on who we are. And the other one or two are particularly difficult to develop. The inferior function or functions are difficult to develop. Very difficult. Few people get all four in our culture. And my premise is that, yes, we can all, in fact, develop all four, but some of them are going to be more difficult than others, depending on who you are. And so today, this morning, you might find individually that one or two of these we go through is complete foreign, exotic to you. And one or two are just completely familiar. Why are we wasting our time on it? Okay, any questions about the basic idea before we launch in? And I've been advised by the planning committee to remind you that if you ask questions, please make sure they're actually questions and not mini memoirs, and that the questions actually have to do with what we're talking about here. And any other questions that are asked, you will be sent to the principal's office, and it will go on your permanent record.
You get dragged by your
feet.
I will drag you by your heels. Actually, my sustainer will do that. Some of you always wanted to be dragged by your heels, I know. Okay, I'd like to start with the nurturing parent, with the north. Okay, I'll say the north, and then you can be looking on either side of your handout. The nurturing parent is that aspect of us, that dimension of our wholeness. It's sort of like an unconditionally loving parent. It's the part of us that recognizes that that everything that happens to us is grist for the mill and our growing and our individuating, that there's no such thing as a toxic emotion. There is no such thing as a toxic emotion. There's all kinds of toxic behaviors based on any kind of emotion, but emotions, no such thing as toxic. Grief, shame, fear, all of it's an important part of the human mix, and the nurturing parent can embrace it all and create a space for you to feel everything that you need to feel, everything that there is to feel, and to reap the lessons from every emotion. That's just an example of the nurturing parent. The nurturing parent also says, when you're ready, go and stride deeper into the world. It's risky. Can't get an insurance policy to protect you. The nurturing parent says, hey, life is about a lot more than security and safety anyways. Can't believe you ever bought that one. You don't want to get to the end of your life having not swept the world up into your arms and been a bridegroom to amazement, something like that. So the nurturing parent says, yes, you can do it, and yes, you'll fall flat on your face, and you'll get dragged through the halls by your heels, and it's okay. When you're embodying the north of yourself in the world, you are what you might call a generative adult. Creative adult. You're embodying, you're manifesting through that aspect of yourself what you were born to do in this lifetime. So it's the place of the leader, teacher, parent, healer, empath. Those are just examples. You could go on and on with examples. But the main theme of the north is competence and knowledge, not wisdom. Those of you who studied Native American wheels or pseudo Native American wheels, wisdom is put in the north. I think that's a mistake. Wisdom's in the east. The north is competence and knowledge. And the north, by the way, has to do with, in terms of nature, with the middle of the night or the winter. Where the sun goes in the middle of the night is the north. It sets in the west, it rises in the east, it's high in the sky in the south. Where is it in the north? It's down below. I mean, where is it in the middle of the night? It's in the north. In the north, or the winter, is the place where you need competence and knowledge to survive and thrive. That's the relationship. I said I wouldn't do this, but I'm doing it. That's the relationship between the north and all these things you find in the north on the wheel. Competence, knowledge, know-how. I recited last night Derek Walcott's poem, Love After Love, which evokes the nurturing parent. And here's one for the, I guess this would be the generative adult. This is William Stafford. This is one of his best-known poems, The Way It Is. The Way It Is. William Stafford. There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change. But it, the thread, doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread. But it's hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you can do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread. Okay, let's go through that again and think or imagine, feel generative adult. It's a mature, this is a very mature approach to being an adult. It's risky. You could lose hold of the thread. You could lose your way. People won't really deeply understand what you're doing. Most people have no idea. Those who do will not ever understand it as deeply as you do. It can't be described by a job description. It's a mystery. Mature adulthood is the embodiment of a mystery. So here's Stafford's take. The way it is, there's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change. But it doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread. but it's hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen, people get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread. You don't ever let go of the thread. It's nice when someone actually lays it out there. That's simple. Straightforward. So, generative adult, mature adult. It has that quality. Every one of us was born with this north component to ourself. You don't have to be any age or a mature adult to have this north. But this north aspect is particularly important in adulthood. But it's important in childhood, adolescence as well. I've got way too many poems possible here. I'm just picking one. This is one from David White. I think it also evokes the nurturing parent, generative adult. And then after this, I'm going to ask you to divide into dyads again and tell each other some stories. This one is all the true vows. All the true vows. All the true vows are secret vows. The ones we speak out loud are the ones we break. All the true vows are secret vows. The ones we speak out loud are the ones we break. There's only one life you can call your own, and 1,000 others you can call by any name you want. Hold to the truth you make every day with your own body. Don't turn your face away. Hold to your own truth at the center of the image you were born with. Those who do not understand their destiny will never understand the friends they have made, nor the work they have chosen, nor the one life that waits beyond all the others. By the lake, in the woods, in the shadows, you can whisper that truth to the quiet reflection you see in the waters. Which truth? The one you make every day with your own body, the one at the center of the image you were born with. By the lake, in the wood, in the shadow, you can whisper that truth to the quiet reflection you see in the water. Whatever you hear from the water, remember, it wants you to carry the sound of its truth on your lips. Remember, in this place, by the lake, in the wood, in the shadow, remember, in this place, no one can hear you. And out of the silence, you can make a promise that will kill you to break. That way you'll find what's real and what's not. I know what I'm saying. Time almost forsook me and I looked again. Seeing my reflection, I broke a promise and spoke for the first time after all these years in my own voice before it was too late to turn my face again. So there's two promises in this poem. One is the one kind it'll kill you to break, and that is, I see, is a threshold to true adulthood, when we make the promise it would kill us to break. And that promise is some version of, I promise to embody for my people, for the more than human world, the gift that I was born to bring to the world, regardless of the humiliations and the criticisms and rejections and the pain and the hurt, partly because of the joy and fulfillment in doing it, but it's mine to do in any case. So that's a promise. The other promise David mentions is the promise to never speak in our own voice, which we make when we're children. usually before we're conscious. Age 3 is a good time to make that promise. I will never speak in my own voice. And we'll get to that tomorrow, because that has to do with the north of the wound, which is tomorrow. Okay, the assignment for this, you all did last night, didn't you? Could I what?
Could you cite that poem again?
Cite it? David White, yeah. With a Y, White, and All the True Vows. Okay, so the experiential doorway into this north aspect was last night, or you can do it tonight or some other time. How many got a chance to do one of those three? That's great. Great. All right. So what I'd like to invite you to do is to find a partner, to be someone next to you or someone behind or in front of you. And I want to invite you, 5 minutes each, to tell a story of a time in your life, a moment, a day, a project, whatever it was, in which you feel you were very strongly embodying this north of yourself. Or if you're not sure you ever did, then tell your partner how it feels to be not so sure about that. And any other emotions that come up about this aspect of the self. You can be talking about it, you can tell a story, and your listener will be drawing out more of your story by asking questions but not interpreting, or therapizing, or advising. Okay? Repeat which part? Tell a story, or talk about a time in your life when you were very strongly embodying this north of the self, which could have its nurturing parent aspect to yourself, or it could be a nurturing parent to someone else, or it could be the generative adult, or it could be the time when you made a promise it would kill you to break, or it could be the time when you broke the promise never to speak in your own voice again. Okay, other questions about what you're about to do? Okay, let yourself be surprised. Maybe even who you're talking to. And if you like to stretch, you and your partner can go somewhere. And after 5 minutes, I'll ring the chime, and that'll be time to switch roles. And then in 10 minutes, we'll be back. See you then. Well, I hope that was useful. I'm curious how many of you, especially if you're a therapist, how many of you are familiar with Richard Schwartz's work, Internal Family Systems? I think Richard is doing some brilliant work that's related to this. And in the therapy he's developed, he evokes the self, that's what he calls it, the self of the client, to do a lot of the healing work directly. So much of his work is to evoke the self in the client. Richard Schwartz, Internal Family Systems. SCH, Internal Family Systems. It's working with one person at a time, mostly. And it's the internal family, which is the inner voices. Okay, so if we move around the circle now, around the wheel, from the north to the east, we have the second dimension of one thing. The one thing is the self, and the second dimension is hard to give one name to it, so I have four archetypes here. And hopefully you at least intuit how these four archetypes are quite related. The innocent, the sage, the fool, and the trickster. So these are ways of trying to get with words at this one dimension of four, the one of four dimensions of this one thing, the self. And so recall that in the east, everywhere on the planet, is where the sun rises. And so the east is associated with the transition from dark to light. And the east is also associated with things going up, like the sun, which we see in the east. It looks like it goes up. We know the earth is actually doing somersaults, but it looks like it's going up. So the east has something to do with the big picture. You know, we've been in a dark time and now we have light and we can see. The east has to do with lightening up after a more serious heavy time in the north. And all of these archetypes you find on the map on the east resonate with those kinds of qualities. Humor being one of the senses of lightening up. So the fool, of course, is an archetype that we find in all cultures and in mythologies. And the fool is actually quite wise and understands things that most of us don't understand. The fool is, well, the East is the place of wisdom, of course, more generally. In Shakespeare's plays, the fool is the one who tells the truth. The trickster, again found in all cultures, is, again, the one who tells the truth or gets us to see the truth by making fun of us or making fun of him or herself. The trickster. The sage, of course, is the wise, we think of as a wise elder. But the innocent also, the innocent has a wisdom, has the innocent sees the truth, manifests the truth, embodies the truth, but is not usually articulate about it at all. It's just right there. Lao Tzu, the Chinese sage, Lao Tzu is a great example of the East because he's both an innocent and a sage. He's thought of, he's revered as a sage, but his name for himself, we are told by translators, is a simpleton. Is what how he referred to himself. And he never thought of himself, we're told, as a sage. When at the end of a long life, he was apparently leaving the kingdom, and some border guard stopped him and made him write down his wisdom before he could leave. But he didn't want to. They made him do it, and he wrote down those 81 sayings. Is it 81? The Tao Te Ching. So, simpleton, innocent, sage. You could say all of these archetypes in the East see things simply. It's not complexity here. It's not about knowledge. It's about seeing life as it is, seeing the world simply as it is. The innocent does that. The sage does that. Trickster uses humor to help us do that. Okay, here's a few poems to evoke this. Oh, by the way, the task or the assignment was this morning's praise walk. Very simple, innocent, just opening our senses and our hearts to what is in nature and praising it. And maybe feeling a little bit like a fool if someone was nearby overhearing us do that. Or maybe we felt a little tricksterish as we were doing it. So, Lao Tzu. There's no need to run outside for better seeing. There's no need to run outside for better seeing, nor to peer from a window. Rather, abide at the center of your being. Abide at the center of your being. For the moment you leave it, the less you learn. Search your heart and see if he is wise who takes each turn. The way to do is to be. The way to do is to be. The East on the wheel. And it happens to be, interestingly enough, very true. The East planet, what we call the East, is very much about being in our center, seeing simply, directly,